The things that were challenging us were actually sacred invitations that our relationship was offering for us to heal and liberate ourselves. And like, what a beautiful thing that instead of the place where you actually go to not be fully expressed, which is usually what happens in relationship, that we actually invite full expression, full possibility, full
Absolutely.
potential. That's like such a different, why is that so weird? It's not, it shouldn't be.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I'm your host, Thais Gibson, and I create regular podcast episodes to teach you about your relationships, attachment style, and the subconscious mind. My goal of this podcast is to give you tools and awareness you need to thrive in your relationships, feel deeply connected, and find harmony and fulfillment in your relationships and personal life. So I hope you tune in here with me each and every week. Mark and Kylie, so happy to be here with you today. Thank you for joining us. I think for anybody, just to kick off, I would love to for you to both be able to share a little bit about your story, how you met and how you got into this work to begin with.
Oh man, we met on Tinder.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't. We met on Instagram, which is basically a dating app.
Not that there's anything wrong with Tinder, but it just was funny because I was like, oh, he's going to tell the story and then short circuit. No.
No, we met on Instagram. I had been following her and her sister for a while. They at the time were health coaches, and I thought it was ironic that they were health coaches in Vegas. I figured they'd be quite busy. And I had read something that she wrote, and when I read it and watched a video that she did, I was like, man, this chick, she like thinks about it, like she is deep. So I fired her a message on Instagram, a DM. I slid into her DMs and I was like, hey, I, you know, read some of your writing and I'd love to connect with you beyond the gram. Playing zero games.
Yeah,
she wrote me back, gave me basically, I remember replying to her and saying, that's basically the best possible reply that I could have received. I think she said something like, I always knew we'd connect beyond the gram, right? Like something like that.
Gosh, I'm almost embarrassed, but yeah, something really cheesy like that.
Yeah, and at the time you had to send a picture to DM someone. This is like old school Instagram.
It's like a decade ago, right?
Nine, yeah. And I sent a sunset and she sent a rivaling desert sunset. So yeah.
I love that. I love that. And then tell me about the beginning of the relationship. So I know that you've talked a little bit about the sacred pause and some of the challenges and all the learnings and how that obviously brought you even closer together. But what were the first few years like leading up to that? And how does that even maybe play into codependency?
Well, it was codependent. Just to give some context to the journey, is about a year before Mark and I met, I got a divorce. And this actually, we mentioned in the book, it's not a big chapter of the book, but I was on the heels of a divorce. And after that divorce, it was very clear to me, like, you need to create a foundation so that you don't lose yourself again in relationship. Because I was like, I was married. I had no idea who I was. I was lost. I was confused. I blew up my whole world. And then I met Mark and I was like, shoot, I really want a good guy who's devoted to growth, personal development. He's aware, like, and he's very kind and all the things. But internally, in entering upon that relationship, I was still split, where it was like, I didn't fully trust myself yet because I didn't really have the foundation in place. And for me, how I defined that foundation was financial security. Like, up until that moment, I had been dependent on men or my family to support me financially. And there's a lot of layers to this, but one of the things that was really driving me was like, before you move into a relationship, you need to be financially stable. Because you need that in order to have agency and in order to speak your truth, in order to have your needs. Anyways, I knew that, like, one part of me knew that, but then there was this older part that was still driving my choice and my nervous system. It was like, you know what? You're good. You'll figure it out. You'll build a foundation in a relationship. And to be honest with you, while that part was still present and the yes was still like louder than the no of moving forward in relationship, I did build that foundation in our relationship. We did do a lot of healing work in the first, as we call it in the book, relationship 1.0, where I did end up building that financial foundation. And eventually, once I built that financial foundation, I know this kind of, I'm saying this in a new way, which is interesting. Never really described it in this way, but once that foundation was in place, it was like, I was then had enough safety in my system to leave. I know that sounds bad, but it was like, then that voice of like, you really need to just feel life on your own. Like you need to be alone for the first time ever. You need to trust that you can depend on yourself. And I had never built that internal trust in self. So that was always something I was bumping up against in relationship 1.0, because I was still sourcing safety, security through Mark and hadn't really practiced sourcing that safety and security through myself. And in our book, we define codependency as any relational dynamic where you source safety outside of yourself at the expense of self, yes, your well-being and your needs. And that's kind of what we were healing in our relationship 1.0, is like, how do we both come back into our own center, build our own internal foundation so that we're no longer sourcing at the expense of self. Mark was sourcing, I'll let you speak to that, validation, worth, trying to source that from me choosing you, which of course I couldn't do because I didn't trust myself to fully choose. And there was like this internal block to being able to choose. So it was like, it was a really beautiful ambivalent dance that I don't recommend for anybody,
yeah.
But it's,
yeah,
it's,
don't do it, it's, but it was beautiful. Needed. No. Well, it's kind of like the, you know, what people talk about, the chemistry that they have with unavailability, right? You know, yeah, someone who's not available, they find super hot. And when you finally build dependency, reliability, trust, you realize that's actually always been the hottest thing. You know, it really is, that you know that you can rely on someone, which is crazy to me that that is paradoxically seen as unattractive. But, you know, in our first relationship 1.0, every relationship that I'd been in that was the one I wanted to pursue was with people who just couldn't fully choose me. They were like out of a relationship. They were, you know, somehow unavailable, unable. And it was in our relationship 1.0 that Kylie's talking about, where, you know, she was like, I've just gone through a divorce. I'm learning to trust men again, blah, blah, blah. Trust myself again, not men. And I was like, well, this is great. I have a whole business where I teach people how to be in relationship. Like, I've monetized my codependency. Like, this is perfect.
Well, it's interesting because as you're saying this, I hear that both of you are basically bringing your patterns into the relationship from where it started. Relationship 1.0 yeah, was not feeling like you had full agency and almost starting by repeating that pattern, even if it changed within the dynamic.
Right.
And then Mark coming in going, well, I'm sort of used to this little bit of unavailability, somebody who can't give full undivided attention or is carrying some things from the past. So it almost sounds to me like relationship 1.0 began from these places.
Yeah, it was perfect.
Sure did. As the universe would have it, of course. Right, that's how right. It would go.
The laughing.
And so what were some of the big learnings that you took out of that? And do you feel that that is part of what created some of the codependency to begin with? You were stuck in these sort of repeating patterns, maybe in a subtle way, because there were a lot of really beautiful things happening in the relationship. And do you think those things, starting off with those patterns, led to the breakdown in certain cases?
Absolutely. There's a great quote from one of my teachers, Kendra Kunal. She talks about how you begin, like the energetic blueprint for how you depend or begin a relationship determines the blueprint for the whole relationship. And I always laugh about that because I entered split, Mark entered split. So we were like split the whole time in relationship 1.0. And that's really it. It's like, you don't know what you don't know, right? Like I think that's one of the most challenging pieces is I personally in relationship 1.0 did not know that there was a different way to be in relationship. My nervous system didn't know, didn't trust. And most people don't know. We weren't modeled what it looks like to be an agency one, and then also to be an interdependent, healthy relational dynamics with one another. Like yeah, that's not something that my mind or even my body had a felt template around. It was like, this is just what love is. Yeah. This is how it works. This is it.
Yeah. It's really fascinating. When you look at the model of relationship that we get, it usually involves some level of self-abandonment, some level of people not sharing how they actually feel, what's actually true. Like, I think one of the craziest things about relationships is usually people, when they leave a relationship, they all of a sudden then do everything they love. They then pursue their dreams. I'm like, man, why are our relationships not the place where we are encouraged to do that? Because we have this other human who loves us, who can see things within us that we can't see, our limitations. Like even a couple of weeks ago, Kylie was like, hey, I see you avoiding that opportunity that you have. Mm. Like, I see you not claiming it, and I see you. And I'm like, damn, you know, and it's through that mirror that you're held to another level of accountability, but also possibility. And we thought, like, in our, this now we can look back in hindsight and see that the relationship was the place where, as you said, these wounds started, you know, like that's where we began the relationship, from these familiar patterns. And the frictions we were having in our relationship were actually offering material for us to heal and work with, to not just heal our stuff, but every one of us, we have imprints and patterns that come from our family systems, our cultures, our parents. And that's not anyone's fault. But at some point, we got to both give the bags back, process our own bags, take them back from our kids if we handed some down. It's never too late. And we really saw that the things that were challenging us were actually sacred invitations that our relationship was offering for us to heal and liberate ourselves. And it just happened to overlap with all our work that we were doing. And that, like, what a beautiful thing that instead of the place where you actually go to not be fully expressed, which is usually what happens in relationship, that we actually invite full expression, full possibility, absolutely, full potential. That's like such a different, why is that so weird? It's not, it shouldn't be.
And I think to your point, we get so many of our ideas about love and relationships, so much of our conditioning from a codependent culture, and also from Disney movies or from social media or from places that, right, are not teaching people to have a healthy sense of self and be properly individuated. And I like what you also said about how, you know, our relationships are showing us to ourselves. That's what it's going to be. They're these sacred invitations to go inward and to actually do some of that work. So going into codependency, because in your book, you talk a lot about codependency. I love that definition of codependency as a whole. What are some of the biggest things you did between relationship 1.0 and relationship 2.0 that helped you break out of these codependent patterns and begin really healing the relationship at a deeper level?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, leaving the relationship for me was a huge initiation into regaining trust with myself. Because my intuition and my, like, whole body was screaming at me. It was like, you gotta go, you gotta go, you gotta go. And I was like, no, this isn't real.
Well, and I think interesting too, it's like, you gotta go despite loving someone, despite the relationship should on paper
be working. Yeah. And so I think that was one of the first steps to actually healing and reclaiming self and individuating out of these younger parts was, okay, I'm going to trust this. I'm going to trust myself. And so leaving relationship 1.0, and Mark and I came to a mutual understanding on that, because we were both like, all right, something's definitely not working. We did everything, Thais. We spent way too much money. No, just kidding. But no, we did everything we possibly could to try to remove what was in the way. Mm-hmm. And it was like,
yeah, we invested in it because of course we cared about each other. We care about each other. And, you know, we wanted to figure out how to make it work. And for me, the ending of relationship 1.0 was just that I had zero tolerance for being with someone who couldn't choose me anymore. Like, I finally hit the edge of my own wound, and I loved her enough and she kept shifting a deal breaker. And that's what, so one of my deal breakers was that I wanted to have kids at a certain time. And when we first met, I was very clear about that. She said, yeah. And then while we were in relationship 1.0, amongst the, like, I'm not sure if this is working, was, well, can we delay having kids? And so I was like, okay, like, let me feel into that time, a 1-year extension. Okay, that feels okay. Then she went to do it again. And that's when I was like, now in hindsight, I could see that when people shift deal breakers, they really want to shift relationship statuses. You know, they're almost challenging unconsciously the other person to see, will you actually stand in the thing you said you stand for? And, you know, in a way, putting it on me to then leave because she wanted or needed to leave. And, you know, it's, I think through that ending of relationship 1.0 that I really knew what it was like to choose myself,
yeah,
instead of pursue people to finally choose me. It was really me that I longed for.
It's so interesting because what I hear is that you both came in with these wounds that both of you magnified within each other, as with all relationships. And in order to heal, you each had to walk away. And by walking away, you gained agency and you chose yourself. And it was like in the actual disconnecting of the relationship, both of you sort of took control of that wounding to begin with and broke that pattern, which is so interesting. And so then how did it go from 1.0 into 2.0? How long were you apart and how long until you were back together? And how did that begin?
Mm-hmm. We stopped trying to save each other from our pain, yeah. Right? Like that's really it. When it comes down to it. Like it both came from such an innocent place, right? In relationship can come from such an innocent place of like, I don't want them to hurt, so I'm going to stay, or I don't want them to hurt, so I'm going to try to save them. And it's like, yeah, that's actually not love. That's again, codependency. Anyways, to kind of answer your question, to go into like the sacred pause, I just want to give some context around that journey within and of itself, because it was huge. It was like, yes, choosing myself. Yes. Mark standing for himself was a big part of that catalyst of coming back home to self and individuating out of those patterns. But for me, a lot of where the work really took hold was in my own nervous system. I did so much somatic therapy because I did not have access to anger at all. It was like my whole system from the neck down, I was just frozen. Like that's just the way I operated in life. And, you know, for the first 30 years of my life, I didn't have a felt sense connection to like my body below my neck. So for me in the sacred pause, it was twofold process, somatic therapy, which supported me to reconnect to my anger so that I could actually use my voice, give voice to my boundaries, understand my own internal limits, understand how that related to my limits with men, with my family system, et cetera. And then also in the sacred pause, which thanks to some beautiful mentors and elders that I have in my life, they were like, you need to go into a container where you completely remove men from your life. And I was like, okay, maybe. But then I remember Mark Wolin, he's the author of It Didn't Start With You. He looked at me and he said, if you don't do this work, I'll be having the same conversation with you in 2 years. And I was like, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in being in codependent dynamics. I'm not interested in losing myself again. I'm not interested in all of that. So I did. I entered into a container with Kendra Kunov, the No Man Diet container, where I completely removed men from my life. No texting, no seeking, no sexting, no all the things. And wow, let me tell you, when I set that container intentionally with the start date and the end date, my nervous system went full tilt. And I had done so much work on myself, but I was like, what is going on in my system right now? But it was like, you're going to die. You're not capable of doing this. You're not capable of being alone. You're not going to be okay. Basically was the like underlying.
Yeah.
It was like the underlying narrative that was operating outside of my conscious awareness for the first 30 years of my life. And then it was like, you create this container and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm starting to see all of these unconscious narratives and stories and patterns in my own system that were driving me. And one of the main reasons why I never felt like I had agency is because this pattern was so strong that, you know, the narrative was like, if you don't do this, you will not be safe.
Wow.
And so
it's so interesting because also you are experiencing this lack of self-trust, but you're saying, I can't feel anything beneath my neck. And it's so difficult to trust yourself when you're not even in touch with what you're feeling or experiencing. But by going inwards and actually taking space from men as a whole, you're almost forced to focus on yourself while you're doing that. There's no more distractions, which is a really powerful thing to do. I'll let you continue, but I just have to say, I actually went through a similar experience where I just 2.5 years didn't do anything. It was swearing onto my own sort of healing, but it was revolutionary. So I didn't know there was something called the No Man Diet. That's a very
right. Either did I. Until I actually went to go search another teacher, John Wineland, and somebody's like, no. Again, another man. She was like, no. You need the teacher who teaches with John, who's a woman who knows this work like in and out. And I was like, I landed on her page and her program started in 3 months. And it was, it changed my life. It's just, you know how it works like that. Like when the teacher is ready, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Yeah.
It was very much like that. And entering into that container was profound. And it's something we talk about in the book as well, is like creating your own cocoon, like you did in your own journey, so that you can begin to bring awareness to things that are driving you outside of your conscious awareness. That's like the main intent of creating it, because you don't know what's driving you until you know.
Well, and so many of our patterns that we struggle with relationally are, we can logically understand things like where it comes from, which we cover, like your relationship blueprints, so you get some understanding, attachment styles. Like, we cover all the things in the book so that you get context to your behavior. And the context is really important because it depersonalizes it, right? Like, if I can look at my childhood and say, oh, that's why I do the thing. So we like allow and give people exercises and inform on what that, where that comes from. But really, all of it is incomplete without some exploration of the nervous system and how the nervous system and attachment styles correlate. Because you've got this thing that you don't even think is doing anything, and it's actually controlling everything. Mm-hmm. And so you want to logically, you know, you're in the logistical part of like, I just say no to that thing. But then when you get to the moment where you have to use your voice doesn't work.
Yes.
And that's because of your nervous system. So we know that, like, through this, these time-bound containers, which, you know, the sacred pause was really, we didn't know we were creating what was necessary to create. Like, essentially our relationship, I think, you know, all of this is so divine because it's like, we didn't have anyone who could walk us through the upper limits of our relational abilities. And so we now have written about it in hindsight. And if someone's single, they can even just like knowing that you're picking the same types of partners, you're ending the same types of ending up in the same types of relationships. It requires this intention to actually trust your body again. Like, as you were saying, like, your body, if you don't have a connection from down here, like, your intuition, your instincts.
It's a confusing way to live.
Yeah. And it'll just look up like, it'll look like I'm dating unavailable people. It will look like we're fighting about the same things over and over again.
It'll look like anxiety. It'll look like depression. It'll look like all of these different ways that
autoimmune, yeah, you know, all these different inflammatory responses that are really saying, you don't listen.
Absolutely. I could, and your body will tell you. And it's interesting because you're also illustrating the difference between the conscious and the subconscious mind. The conscious mind says, I'm going to use my voice. And then the subconscious is also going, well, we're used to operating this way with these patterns. And
right,
we know the conscious mind can't outwill the subconscious mind. So it's very interesting. And what was your journey, Mark? So Kylie shared beautifully the she created the cocoon and was able to really take that time and space and do a lot of that somatic work. And what was your experience? Because it sounds like both of you had to lay the groundwork outside of the relationship during the sacred pause to be ready for 2.0.
Well, I'll say that the leaving and the ending of relationship 1.0 was really profound for me. Like, it was like a deep sense of self-trust. Like, hey, when I am in relationship with someone I love who we're not aligned, I've got me. Like, that, I've got me. And, you know, when we were right before, just to give people more context, right before we were breaking up, you know, I had a conversation with Kai in the kitchen, and I said to her, they always happen in the kitchen, these conversations, but I was like, look, like, I want to have a family. I want to create an epic life with someone. I want that to be with you. But if you don't want that with me, I love you. You're not imprisoned to this relationship. If you need to go, you need to go. And that's actually the most important thing. And it was an interesting flip because I'd found myself in a conversation like that when I was 27, but I was on her side. And I had desperately wished someone would have said that what I was feeling was okay and that it was okay for me to go. But, you know, I didn't have the emotional maturity back then. So I got to be able to say that to Kylie, and it was so transformative. And one of the things we did that prepared us for actually coming back together, but it didn't seem connected at the time, is to end our relationship, we actually did a closing ceremony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I Googled like closing ceremony relationship, and I'm like, are there other crazy people who do this? And I got a bunch of ideas that I put together and I sent them to Kylie, like, what do you think? And she's like, I'm in. So I got to the house to have the closing ceremony. And I remember sitting outside in my car being like, I don't want to go in. Like, I don't want to do this. And I checked in with myself and I'm like, do I not want to do this because I just genuinely don't want to? Or do I not want to do this because the person who can do this doesn't exist yet? And the answer was number two. So I got out of the car and I went into the house. And I was profoundly changed by that experience because we ended the relationship with such love, like such reverence, such sacredness, that I was like, man, I wish I had learned about doing this kind of thing, you know, when I was younger, to be able to close things with grace and reverence. So what that taught us, which really prepared us for to be able to move forward and ultimately to come back together, is that our relationship status, like how we related to each other, changed. We went from being a couple to being, you know, amicable, but I wouldn't say friends yet, because that's early. Not a bridge anyone can want, even if they pretend to. And it taught us that love existed even though the container changed and it wasn't going anywhere. So now we had no risk in love. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, like it was such a profound, it was actual unconditional love.
Mm-hmm. There wasn't this codependent tie there, and there wasn't the pressure or expectation of the romantic relationship. You could just be and feel and love as you were and as you felt for one another.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it created one of the principles that we talk about in the book is that one of the principles of liberated love is honoring each other's path as your own. There is two individuals walking a path alongside each other. And if we honor that and we don't try to control where her path is leading, then we're actually more likely to walk together, because she now gets to consent to the choice to being, and I get to choose, like we're choosing to walk alongside each other rather than a have to, which that's at the core of so much relational dysfunction, is this idea that you can never leave. You made a commitment, but it's like an adult can leave in any moment if they decide to. So if we just pretend that truth doesn't exist, now we're going to operate anxiously and try to control things. And we're also not going to have conversations that might end the relationship. And so one of the other principles of liberated love, which really is the difference between 1.0 and 2.0, is we just have an absolute dedication to the truth, telling the truth above everything, no matter what. And that's so freeing, because our relationship has the psychological and emotional safety that it can hold any truth. I don't have a fear of bringing anything forward.
And I think you see so often with people, they're so afraid of telling the truth and saying how they're feeling, because they're going, oh, what if I hurt somebody's feelings? Or what if it doesn't go well? And they don't trust themselves to have the conversations and to work through things, but they never get the opportunity to, because they're holding everything in the first place. And as somebody who worked with couples for a long time in my previous life, I would see people come into my office at the time, and they would be up to here with resentment and frustration. Oh, yeah. And it would seem like there was this huge ball of yarn that you had to keep unwinding and unwinding all these different really painful experiences they had that they had never properly talked about, because they couldn't tell the truth. And you don't give room for resolution at that point. So from there, when you came out of this sort of sacred pause, did you stay in touch, or you stayed just distant with a sense of closure? And how long did that last for before reconnecting in a more romantic form?
Yeah, the sacred pause was around 10 months in total. There were, I'd say, two long stretches of zero contact with two minor connection points in between. I think at month 4, we connected, and then at month
7.
Yeah, just to drop in, and we go in way more detail around those two one specific connection point and the lessons there in the book. I'm not going to digress on that, but it's containers are funny. All your stuff gets kicked up when you choose to intentionally create the container or the boundaries,
limitations.
So it's like, oh, okay, you want to do that healing work? Okay, you're going to have to look at all this stuff. Anyways, one of the things that was really crucial in the coming back together was we actually created a dating container. We're obsessed with containers now because they work, and they kind of create containment around some really big questions that I think as adults we should be asking when we enter into a relationship. So our dating container it was a 3-month dating container. I reached out to Mark. I was like, hey, I'm interested in exploring this connection again. I know we've both done a lot of work. And he was like, yeah, let's connect. And so we did. And the parameters were living into the questions for 3 months. Like, what is the best and highest form for this relationship? Is it a friendship? Is it romantic? Or is it just best to just leave it off the table and continue to on our own individual paths? And then I forgot what the third one's off the top of my head right now, but it was like, is this union in service to love? in service to growth? And is this actually bringing more warmth, more nourishment, more connection to both of us instead of disconnection, instead of continually just.
Yeah. Like, is it nourishing us?
Is it nourishing us?
And the world.
And the world.
Yeah.
And we lived into that question, these questions for 3 months, and we didn't completely bypass what came up in those 3 months. We continued to sit with, like Mark said, the devotion to truth of like, what's coming up for us? Like, does this feel like a yes yet? And at moments, Mark was like, no, it doesn't. Like, there's still some stuff, some grit we got to work through and heal and repair from previously. But then ultimately at the end of the 3 months, it was like, all right, I think we have a solid foundation to actually feel good and move forward into a romantic container again.
What would you say was the hardest part of the 3 months and the most rewarding part of the 3 months?
I'd say the hardest part was building trust again, you know, because here Kylie was coming back for me and saying, I'm ready to choose this. And I'm like, yeah, you said that before. I don't actually trust you. I don't believe you. And so because we were in this dedication to telling the truth, you know, she was able to receive that and say, yeah, you know, I hear you. I totally understand why you don't trust what I'm saying. And I just need you to know I'm not going anywhere. And that was kind of everything I wanted. That was everything I'd always wanted to hear. With that, it was also, I could feel that her body meant it.
Yeah.
And that was a big difference for me. And the other side that was really healing for me was that I am like the person that when I have a connection with someone, I'm like, oh yeah, like I can already imagine our wedding. I'm imagining our life together. I'm like what stereotypically people would think of the woman as projecting a future. And so, you know, I would say in relationship had not been discerning in the entrance of the relationship, you know, like, is this actually for me? Like staying in this moment by moment, is this a fit? Is this a fit? And I could tell that in that 3 month container, I really wanted to have like the certainty earlier than the 3 months, like we're doing this forever now. But that wasn't honest.
Yeah.
Because when I would then check in with myself and say, wait, is this actually a forever? Does this fit now? And it was like, no, you're just trying to get that forever agreement so you don't feel anxious about what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was really challenging for me because the container forced me to stay in discernment.
Wow.
Which was actually really
out of self-abandonment, it sounds like. Stay
making sure that
you are fully attuned to yourself and not abandoning yourself for an outcome or what you're hoping will happen in the projected future.
And I was so used to doing that I didn't even know I'd been doing that. And, you know, like it ultimately the container just is about creating really explicit agreements. Yeah. And agreements create safety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Stan Tatkin's work, he talks, you know, he's a pretty famous therapist. He talks about how the reason most relationships fail or end is because of a failure to create agreements at the beginning. And, you know, this is about getting very explicit. Like, what do we want? What do we want to create in the world? Who do we want to be? These are not questions that we're taught about when we're entering relationship. Like, who in their Catholic church training, you know, like I think about the priest meets with couples to maximize their ability to stay married forever. I'm like, are they sitting down? Like, maybe they are actually. I never got consultation by a priest. But, you know, we're not explicitly taught this in school. And it's such an important aspect. Like, why are we not taught this?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. What's so interesting to me is that you're both speaking is Kylie, I forget who you mentioned earlier, but you said that somebody was saying that the way you basically energetically start the relationship is how the relationship will go. It's the blueprint for the relationship and how it ends. And what I really hear so far in both of your journey is that you sort of started not on the foot that you would want for the long term, but as you're going through the sacred pause and as you're actually starting this container again of 3 months, it's like almost the ultimate blueprint of how you can want the future to go. And you sort of have that closure ceremony to restart and reset on sort of the best note that you possibly could for the future, which is really powerful to listen to. And as you go into 2.0, what were the big things that you did besides, you know, having these really clear agreements, being very intentional with how you readdress the relationship that you think really broke that codependency once and for all?
For For me, I think there was just a deep dedication to the other person's sovereignty, like really advocating for them to be their fullest self. Like me really advocating for Kylie's work that she was doing on, you know, maintaining a sense of self, financial independence, all the things that she desired, the things she wanted to bring to life. But it was really like making sure I'm honoring her most coming alive, which is honoring my path and honoring my advocacy and honoring my lack of, you know, and I think that was a really, that there was just a real interest in the emotional, psychological, and somatic health of each other. Like that the relationship actually nurtured all those things, that it, that if there was any self-silencing or I sensed any lack of self-expression from her, that there was such a creation of safety, like, hey, I noticed this, and vice versa, where, you know, if I wasn't sharing something, really leading to my edge of like, I noticed that I'm holding back on this.
Yeah. I mean, again, that devotion to truth of sharing what was coming up in our bodies was crucial. And I think another big piece, and we talk about this in the book, is we actually created a limit around like having no penetrative sex in the first 3 months. And of course we have,
you had to cough before you use the word penetrative.
Like, my womb is like, oh,
penetrative sex. I feel like I'm in health class whenever I hear the word penetrative.
I know, but it's like, I don't know how else to say it. It's like we removed home run. I don't know what they call it these days.
I don't know either these days. I think they call it smashing these days, don't they? I don't know. I know.
That's not the right word.
I'm not a Gen Zer, so I have no, I think I'm called an elder millennial. That's like just a middle-aged person.
Really? Are you?
I heard that term the other day and I'm like, am I an elder millennial?
I don't think you.
Which I said to my friend who called themselves that, who's 40. I was like, that just means you're middle-aged. You're an old young person. That's it.
Very good. Go on.
No penetrative sex. Let's get back to health class.
Yeah, we got to get back to health class. And the reason why I think that was incredibly powerful for me, and I'm not going to speak for you on that, but is it removed all the hormones and all of the ways that we had used sex historically to soothe and placate and, you know, discharge anxiety or emotion, when it's like, really, actually, we need to be having some really serious conversations to create the safety for this, for it to feel fully embodied. That limit really, I think, kicked up a lot of stuff for us, material for us to talk about. It like invited a new level of psychological, emotional, and sexual intimacy that we didn't have before, because it was like off the table. So then everything that we had historically placed on sex to give us was removed. And then we had to create it through conversation and through other pathways, which, I mean, was hard, but also not at all. Like, it actually became such deep medicine, I think, for us both.
Yeah.
Because we got to play in a different way, like with touch, and like, not to go down that road, but it's like, we had put so much emphasis, and I think our culture does as well, on orgasm as like the end goal. And it's like, actually, like, how do we nurture one another in this space and totally remove the hormonal blend and cocktail that we get from sex?
I was just gonna say, I think that's so powerful. And I also think that it speaks to how intentional you're being about the relationship, how much you're treating it with a sense of sacredness by saying, okay, we want to be super clear, we want to leave no stone unturned in these different areas. Yeah. So I think that's really beautiful to hear.
Yeah, I think about it like so. So many of, God, this word penetrative is really getting me. So many of us put our bodies into places that are not emotionally safe. Mm-hmm. We're so used to doing that, and we bypass our own somatic space. You know, we often, and I'm speaking for myself, but I see this very much culturally. I see this in many people, is that we use sex as a gateway for connection. Like, if I want to have sex with them to make sure there's a connection, as opposed to, I want to make sure there's a connection. And then that leads into right. the safety for deeper intimacy. And this is no judgment of someone's order of those things, but I would argue that we actually require psychological and emotional safety in order to actually be truly intimate. You know, I think about how many of us use substances to not be fully present in those experiences, which really tells you that if you can't do it sober, you really shouldn't be doing it. And so I think just you know, coming back to the container that had that agreement, it allowed for there to be an establishment of deep trust and safety, but still intimacy and connection and all the other bases, which were really about presence to one another, presence to the moment, and that it wasn't so outcome oriented, you know, which don't get me wrong, we're not saying don't appreciate a good orgasm.
But it's the theme, and it's traveling all the way across the relationship, which is really beautiful, right? Like, it seems like that was a big part of your theme, was just even, you know, for the commitment and wanting to push ahead in that 3-month period, wanting the outcome. Right. And so it's interesting.
Yeah, right into penetrative sex. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, let's just play just the tip. Come on.
boundaries and limits. That's why I always tell women, I was like, hold the bar. I was like, you're gonna, like, you have to hold the bar, you have to hold the limits so that this work can happen. And what I'm seeing in a lot of women's bodies is the complete, like, the body is just like, we're gonna hold the limit for you since you're not holding it,
right?
And then of course they turn it in on themselves, and it's like, I'm broken, there's something wrong with me, and there's something to fix here, when it's actually like, no, your relationship, your body is the thermostat for that relationship. And Marian Woman talks about that a lot. And I think we need to really start opening that dialogue.
I agree with that. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I asked Mark about the most challenging part and the most rewarding part of the sacred pause, and then that moving into that container. What would you say was yours?
I think for me, the most challenging part, like in retrospect, was holding the bar, was holding the limit.
Interesting.
Was like actually being okay to like hold the anchor in those moments of like not collapsing into even his timeline or fantasy, where it was like, oh, like, because historically I probably would have been like, yeah, forever. But it's like, no, we're in a container. That's not clear yet. And then like, I had to constantly come back to like being really clear in that, because I didn't want to collapse myself to then collapse into his so that we would both feel safe. And the dynamic was like, no, we're not interested.
It's
not true safety.
Yeah.
And so I think I had to continually hold the bar. And there were so many moments in relationship 2.0 where it was like, okay, Kai, you're either going to bring this forward, or you're going to override your body, override your intuition again. And there was one moment specifically where I went to bed on it, because I was like, oh, I don't really want to do this work right now, but I'm just going to sleep on it. Like, should I have this conversation? Should I not? And then of course you'll read about it in the book, but my dreams are very loud. They like to come in with messages for me. And then in one night I went to bed, I was like, okay, we'll just sleep on it. And in the dream, I became a fire breathing dragon. Poor Mark, but like, I became a fire breathing dragon. And I'm like, you are not going to minimize your truth, your intuition here. Like, you're bringing it forward. And I was like, fuck. Because before I was gentle, I was soft. And now I'm like, oh.
Yeah, okay. I was like, damn, no, not like, anymore.
I'm not going to bypass my own self. I'm not going to gaslight myself anymore. Like,
yeah, it was powerful.
We're going to talk about this.
A lot of the healing that happened in that coming back together, mm-hmm. from my experience of Kylie, was that there was a lot of healing of trust in men, a lot of healing and trust in the masculine,
yeah,
a lot of healing of rage towards the patriarchy, you know, which that made sense. You know, I get that the self-silencing, the self-abandonment, all of that. I wasn't the source of it, but I was honored to be the place, you know, although it was in an experience with me, but I was honored to be the place that could be healed. And also I could also heal things in unison with her.
Yeah. And I feel like, thank God for that. But like, I feel like Mark and I in relationship 2.0 were healing like what felt like really old intergenerational imprints for both men and women, where it was like, no longer will I override the womb, my actual felt sense of yes, like no longer. And it's like all the times where that's been exploited by self and by another, and like actually doing that healing work to process the grief and the like, it was just, it was a lot. It was like when I sit with it now, it's like easy to talk about. But in those moments, do you remember how emotional? Like, all
she was really mad one day in the backyard. I remember that. And I was like, I'll just sit here. I just sat there. She wasn't mad at me. I was just like, whoa, okay.
And he's like, what do you really want to say? And it's like,
oh, yeah. 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 Allowing
me to like just boom, like just tap into the rage that I had at that moment. And it, like, again, like it wasn't personal, but he allowed it to be like, it was really cool to kind of just let it all go,
Yeah, I didn't take it personally. We're normally, you know, if we're codependent, that I become defensive.
Yeah.
But I was like, nah, this isn't mine. This is ours.
Beautiful. And also I hear that in doing that, you're breaking the patterns that originally started off and what caused the relationship to end to begin with. So by doing that, you're doing it for you, but you're also doing it for the relationship in a sense, because the 1.0 wasn't going to last in the 2.0 version of the relationship. So it almost comes full circle in a really beautiful way. Well, I want to say a huge thank you to both of you for sharing your story. I think it's so vulnerable and powerful to hear this. I think it sets such an amazing example in a very real life way for people who may be experiencing similar things and wanting to do some healing in their relationships and not know where to start. So thank you for the work that you're both doing. It's beautiful to witness. And where can everybody find out more about both of you, and where can they buy the book?
Yeah, so you can find me at Create the Love on Instagram, or my podcast, Mark Groves Podcast. The book you can get wherever books are sold. And if you want, there's a free download if you buy the book for a meditation and a workbook. And that's at createthelove.com/liberatedlove. And
yeah, and the best place to find me is at Being Is Beautiful on IG for now.
Beautiful. Well, thanks so much. This was so fun to chat with both of you, and looking forward to hopefully having you back one day soon.
Oh, thank you. Look forward to it as well.
Appreciate it.
Much love.